I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hey folks, welcome into a new episode of The Memo Podcast, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Brad Locke here with Chris Kiefer. Noticeably absent, again, is Derek Russell.
Is it noticeably?
Again. He was gone a couple of weeks ago, man. Yeah. What's he doing now? Working?
Working.
He's got like real work to do as opposed to this?
You know, that's what he says anyway.
This is real work.
We haven't independently verified that, though.
Yeah, so it's just me and Kiefer. And before we go any further, I should mention that the vacation beard Kiefer has grown is pretty epic, and I hope it sticks around.
I'll kill the suspense. It's probably not sticking around much longer, but it's my camping beard. So yeah,
If you've watched Newsbreak this week, you've seen it.
Yeah, there you go. If you want to see the beard,
that's the policy now. If you're going to host Newsbreak, you have to have a beard.
That's what Maggie Bushway said. Who puts Newsbreak together? Yeah, she asked if that was the new thing.
Since, yeah, because Derek has one too. Yeah, and so
trying to keep up.
They got a bunch of lumberjacks doing Newsbreak.
Yeah, exactly. So it's my camping beard. I've been gone the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so
you were gone 2 weeks. We missed you.
Well, appreciate that. good trip. Yeah, so I don't shave when I'm camping, obviously, because it's a pain to do that. I just decided to leave it for a little bit. It's too hot. I don't know. You know, you have your beard all around, and I guess if you're used to it, it's good. But yeah, if you're just trying to break in a new beard.
Yeah, I can imagine if you're trying to break it in. I mean, as long as I keep it off my neck, which I need to shave. Yeah. As long as I do that, it doesn't bother me in even the hottest of summers.
Yeah,
I just forget it's there. Unless I let it get really long, then it gets annoying. It's a good look.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Just saying. Maybe if it goes away, just hope it comes back.
Yeah, in the winter. Exactly. That's why it's kind of a good time to test it out, I figured.
There you go. Yeah, y'all went way out west to San Francisco, got to see the Giants play.
Yeah, we did. We saw a Giants game, and they did not play well, but they've not played well all year.
Yeah,
so
well,
it's kind of typical. And then did a lot of camping and just beautiful nature and everything.
You and the Kents.
Great. Yeah,
Emma Kent, sure did. Emma Kent, our education reporter.
And Jacob, right?
Yeah.
We're with us in Deanna and I, so. Yeah, it was good. And then had a little time in New Orleans, too. My parents kept the kids, and so we went down there and dropped them off and had a day, and then had a couple days at the end and got to see some family. But like you said, went out there with Emma and Jacob, and it was great. We went to Big Sur and went to Sequoia National Park.
That's cool.
And went to Yosemite, which is Yosemite Valley. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, I've been out there. Went and saw all the huge redwoods when I was like four, and I do remember that. And then we went to Yosemite when I was a teenager. So it's really, really cool out there, really pretty.
Yeah, it is. You know, I love the mountains and I love the Rockies, and the Tetons always been my favorite spot, and I still really like the Tetons, but Jacob kept needling me like, is this better than the Tetons? And I finally said, you know what, it's 1A and 1B. I mean, two of the most beautiful places I've ever been.
Yeah, it's all really cool,
great,
man.
Yeah.
I want to go back at some point.
Yeah, you need to.
In fact, one of my daughters is in Colorado right now, so she's out in the mountains.
You were talking about that.
Yeah, she's on a youth trip, so I'm kind of jealous. I got another daughter in Knoxville, staying with a friend, and my other daughter flew up to Chicago to go see her aunt and uncle. So I've got my kids scattered all over the country right now. It's kind of quiet at the house. I'm not complaining or anything.
I bet. So this is our first day working together in a while, because I got back and you've been
I've been off
the last couple of days, including a movie screening last night, right?
Yeah, Tuesday night had the premiere screening of Cubicle City. I don't even know if I've talked about it on here. I probably have. Glenn Payne, it's a short film that he made, and he was nice enough to cast me in it as a big scary monster detective guy. So you don't see my face, thankfully, but you hear my voice, which he did augment with some audio. I don't know what you call it, but he did a little work to make it sound.
He didn't think he
sounded like a monster.
Enough like a monster already?
Apparently not. So that was cool, man. We had a good turnout there at Malco.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, and I don't know if you can buy DVD copies. You could buy them last night, DVD copies. You probably can. Just go to glennpayne.com and two N's in Glenn.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if people wanted to see it. Didn't we have a story a year or so ago about one of his movies being sold at Barnes & Noble?
We probably did, because he had a thing with his movie Earthrise.
Maybe that's the one. So maybe this one will be at Barnes & Noble, too? I'm
sure at some point it will be, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was just a test screening. He's going to enter it into some festivals in the coming months and see if it gets accepted to some of those. And I don't know. He'll try to distribute it some way, obviously DVD at some point. I don't know. He may try to get it on some kind of streaming service. Some of his movies are on Amazon, for instance, like Earthrise. So may try to go that route as well. We'll see. But it was a good experience.
Yeah. Is it surreal watching yourself in a movie?
It kind of is. I mean, I had seen a rough cut of it on his computer a few months ago when we had to go do some voiceover work. But yeah, seeing it on the finished product on the screen, it was kind of neat. I mean, probably would have been even more surreal if you could have actually seen my face. Because you just see me in that big mask, and you hear my voice. That again, he did some stuff to make it sound more like a monster. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. You were talking off air about your youngest daughter Ellie had gone to the movie.
Yeah,
yesterday.
She went too, and we were trying to. My wife was trying to get her to pay attention to it. She was like, "Look at the monster!" And she saw my character, and she goes, "Ghost." She has this thing about ghosts. Obviously, if you've listened to this program, you know that apparently our house is haunted. And now, for some reason, she's gotten on this kick about she sees ghosts all the time, air quotes.
She sees dead people.
So, and sometimes we'll be like, Ellie, be spooky. She'll go, whoo. So she's all about being spooky and ghosts and whatnot.
Since
so,
she lives so, with them.
Apparently. I don't know how that started. But, yeah, so she thought I was a ghost. But she didn't really know that was me. She's only 22 months old. She doesn't quite grasp that was under the mask. You know, they have a different perception of reality at that age.
Right.
One I envy sometimes. We got a good show lined up today. And I'm sure I'll pimp my movie more as we find out how it's distributed, by the way. We got Bobby Harrison. He's going to talk about...
By Philip Gunn. Yeah. There's a couple of House members
that are moving on to
different positions.
Right, like one got elected mayor of Hattiesburg, I think.
That's right, I think another one got appointed to a committee or a position by the governor.
Bobby will fill us in on that. We'll have Caitlin O'Doherty to talk about her story the other day about the Joyner Garden District. Of course, Joyner, that neighborhood was hit hard by the 2014 tornado, so they're trying to come back and beautify that area, and they had a tour, I think, on Saturday. So Caitlin, stop in and talk about that as well. And then we've also got
Adam Robison is going to talk about his recent photo essay about a lawnmower repair company in Saltillo.
Cool. All right, let's get started. Let's welcome Caitlin O'Doherty back into the program. Caitlin, how you doing?
Good. Happy to be back.
Yes, ma'am. Your second appearance on The Memo.
Yes. Yeah. Exciting.
Seasoned veteran now.
Exactly.
Yeah. We got to actually get a couple of things we'd like to try to talk about here. Stories you had over the past few days. On Saturday, the Joyner Garden District had, a tour of that area. Of course, for people who have been around here a while, they know in 2014, big tornado came through Tupelo, Joyner, that neighborhood got hit the hardest. And I remember, Chris, you were here, you can attest to this. First time I drove through, and I used to drive through there all the time, on what's that street that goes through?
From Clayton?
I think it's Kincannon, that's the name of the street. It goes up through there, and just a bunch of trees used to be kind of a tree canopy, really. And then the first time I drove through there after the tornado, it was like I didn't recognize it.
Yeah.
And if you had just dropped me there, not knowing where you were dropping me, I wouldn't have recognized it as Joyner.
Yeah.
So I guess it's kind of, I don't know if you, you were not here. I guess you were at State
right.
at the time, but I mean, honestly, I haven't been through there lately. So, I mean, what's it look like now?
Well, there's definitely a lot more sun coming through, which is what a lot of the residents kind of were a little sad about, because as they all said, they used to have beautiful canopies shading their backyards, and a lot of them have had to deal with adjusting to the new sun, and definitely you work up a sweat back there, but it's still beautiful, though. They've definitely rebuilt it to be better than ever, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you talked to several people who lived there and had featured homes. I mean, you talked about the Tupelo Spirit, which people know about here. They really seem to kind of demonstrate that spirit, don't they?
Right, exactly. A lot of them just said, you know, we all care about our neighbors. We care about each other. And I think that's what the Tupelo spirit comes down to for them. And so them going through that tornado kind of brought them together. And now the rebuilding process has brought them even closer together.
Yeah.
I was going to say, your story, I guess, was about they just got a garden club designation. Is that right? When did that happen? Or kind of what was the process for that?
Well, they had, before the tornado hit, they were attempting to become a garden district. And so after the tornado hit, obviously that got kind of skewed. Their plans were a little bit altered. So now they're kind of going back into that and becoming the garden district. And so now they are officially known as the Joyner Garden District.
Okay. And there was a tour. That was what the tour was for,
right,
on Saturday.
Right.
Sure.
One lady you spoke to, Bonnie Mims, described kind of her home and her property there. They have a what they call a platform 1604.
Right.
Is that right? What is
yes.
that?
Yes. So it's just a platform, little wooden platform, and directly next to it, there's some chickens back there, and they have a swing set back there. So it's basically a place for the neighborhood kids to kind of come hang out.
Cool.
She has a granddaughter who was there at the time I was touring the house, and she said, you know, a lot of kids will just come over and just hang out on the platform and enjoy it.
You know, without the trees that they used to have, I mean, what is kind of the emphasis now as far as beautifying and making the comeback as a neighborhood?
Right. Well, a lot of them have planted, you know, they've replanted a lot of the flowers that were lost, trying to replant some of the trees and have those grow back. But a lot of them also added on just outside decks. And so a lot of them will have the adult version, I guess, of the platform, and
yeah.
they'll have company out there. A lot of them had nice, they were very open. And so it's just, they kind of had to resurface everything.
Yeah. And it seems like this effort, and I think one guy you spoke to, Jay Ware, who actually coached my son's baseball team this
okay.
year, he's a good guy. You know, he talked about how the city really did a good job helping with this, and this is going to help maybe attract some people into the neighborhood, younger people even.
Right, exactly. He was saying they're really trying to draw people back in because people may not think of it as being as beautiful as it used to be, but they're trying to show that it really hasn't lost its beauty. It's just a new kind of beauty for them.
Yeah. Well, I think all the proceeds from this tour go to just simply upkeep of the district, right?
Right, exactly.
So they kind of give me an idea. I mean, people have their own yards that they work on, but it really is kind of a group effort in a sense.
Right. And they all know each other. You know, every
yeah.
single house I went to, they knew the next door neighbor or knew the person even down the street. So
yeah.
it really is just a group effort, like you said, to bring it together.
I think that's something that's kind of lost. I'll be honest, in all the neighborhoods I've lived in, since we moved to Tupelo, I have not been great. Maybe it's just me because I'm not social. I never felt that sense of, you know, knowing everybody in the neighborhood or on your street even.
Right.
And just that sense of community that you used to get, at least when I was growing up.
I get the impression that Joyner is unique in that, too. I mean,
yeah.
certainly not the only one, but that's special. That's one of the things I picked up from covering after
yeah,
the tornado
yeah.
and just being in that neighborhood a lot. And I just remember realizing even at its lowest point just how special of a neighborhood it is
yeah.
Because
yeah.
of that community spirit. And I'm sure that kind of showed forth at the tour on Saturday.
Right, exactly. It definitely did.
Yeah, I'm glad it's coming back. And when you think about it, Chris, you know, all those trees in that neighborhood, from what I remember at the time, the people said that if not for all those trees, the neighborhood itself might have just been destroyed. I mean, they kind of shielded the homes from what could have been even worse damage.
Broke the wind up a little bit. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's kind of on the one hand, there were a lot of trees that fell on the houses, and
True.
So the trees did the damage. But on the other hand, I've also heard that if the trees weren't there, then,
I mean, it's, yeah.
You know, they kind of provided a buffer a little bit,
I
guess.
It's still amazing nobody was killed in Tupelo by that tornado.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Sure is. You know, I'm curious, while we're just on this point, and I don't know if anybody talked about this, but you mentioned a lot more sun than there used to be before. So they're talking about a garden district. Did anyone talk about, are there different things now that they can grow that they couldn't grow before when it was shadier?
No one mentioned anything specific
yeah, sure.
with that. I'm sure there are, though,
yeah.
because a lot of them, you know, talked about different community organizations bringing in plants for them.
Sure.
So I'm sure a lot of those were different than what they had in the past.
I'm just wondering if that's yet kind of a silver lining
right.
in some ways or
right.
something. I don't know.
Right, right. Again, glad to see that neighborhood coming back. Let's also touch real quickly on the story you had about the Salvation Army, Caitlin. Of course, you know, during the holidays and such, you'll see a big push and a lot of people will donate food. and such to the Salvation Army here in Tupelo. But right now, demand is high, but they don't have a lot in their pantry, do they?
Right. And in talking to Susan Gilbert, who runs a lot of the organization over there, she just said it's very hard because right now they're pretty much living off of the donations from the holiday season. And she said a lot of people just forget that they're there over the summer. They're busy. Yeah. They're caught up with stuff. So they're definitely looking for more donations.
Yeah, I mean, she did mention that, you know, Mississippi, and this is, I think I've seen some studies and reports on this, it's a very generous state, even though, you know, we rank near the bottom economically. So is it, it's just a matter of, I guess, like you said, when this time of year, it's just easy to forget that stuff. This stuff seems to go in cycles when it comes to donating.
Right. And she did mention they'll actually have a no-bake bake sale tomorrow. And so that's where people can, instead of baking goods, they would take the money that they were to use to bake those goods and bring it to the Salvation Army. So there's ways to donate without having to go buy food necessarily. You can just drop off some money for them.
Yeah. They're also going to have a 24 hours of homelessness in September. What's that about?
Right. They'll actually be living as a homeless person would in the shelter. So she said they'll put them in the gym, so it'll be a little bit separated, but they will be living without their debit card, without their ID for some of them. And just kind of told what it would be like to be a homeless person in that situation.
So it's just people who want to volunteer to do this.
Right, exactly.
Well, yeah, I think that's easy to kind of just kind of, as you get busy going through life, kind of you don't realize how hard it can be for those people in that situation. Maybe that'll be something to spark more giving as well. So what are they doing? What are they able to do? I mean, they're subsisting off these donations from, what, 6 months ago.
Right.
I mean, how much are they having to kind of ration things or whatever?
They've definitely had a ration, but they're also relying on some donations from restaurants around the community. So Olive Garden is one she actually mentioned. She said that the food that's in the kitchen that doesn't get touched, they'll bring that on over to the center, and they'll use that to kind of get by for the time being.
And a lot of times they'll get stuff sent down from Memphis, but Memphis is having a hard time too, aren't they?
Yeah, they'll get deliveries from up there, but Memphis is seeing the same struggle. So it really is kind of an epidemic going on right now.
Wow, yeah. And she said demand is high. Is it normally this high this time of year, did she say?
She said it's pretty average. She thinks the numbers are rising. She thinks there'll be a greater number of families total this year.
Yeah.
But I think it's on a pretty steady incline.
Yeah, okay. Well, you can check out Caitlin's stories in the Journal in the recent days, also at djournal.com. As always, Caitlin, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Be sure to look for the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps. New episodes air every Wednesday. You can listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. And also, we've got double coverage, an Ole Miss and Mississippi State podcast with Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry. New episodes each Thursday afternoon as the guys provide insight, game previews, and commentary on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to it in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
And wake up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's News Break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video. Shows will be posted every Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. You can watch them for free at any time at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. Stay informed on the latest happenings in your community in an easily digestible format.
Let's go down to Jackson and visit with Bobby Harrison, our Capitol Bureau Chief. Bobby, how you doing?
All right, Brad, how you doing?
Good, sir. Let's talk about some committee assignments. House Speaker Philip Gunn will have to make two or three in the coming weeks, Bobby, and these are some pretty important positions, aren't they?
Yeah, there's at least two openings, probably going to be three. You know, Herb Frierson, who was the Mark Formby, he was a longtime member from down in Frederick County. He was appointed by Governor Phil Bryant to the Workers' Compensation Commission during the session. And so that's one vacancy. Then during last Tuesday's municipal election, Toby Barker in Hattiesburg was elected mayor of Hattiesburg. He's been a tenured member of the House from Hattiesburg. And then over in Vicksburg, Alex Munster was elected to the Vicksburg City Council. He's been a pretty long time member from Warren County. Now Munster doesn't have to resign from the House. He said he probably will. He said he would, but as last time I checked, he hadn't yet. Hmm. You know, the City Council is considered a legislative branch, and of course, the legislature is a legislative branch. So you could actually serve on the City Council and in the legislature. Toby Walker will be mayor of Hattiesburg, so that's an executive branch position, and so he's going to have to resign from the House because can't, you know.
Yeah, state constitution says you can't hold office in the legislative and executive branch at the same time.
Yeah, 6-101, you can't, you know, separation of powers, you know, that whole thing we learned in ninth grade, Brad, way back in the day. And then Formby's already resigned, and all three members are on the money committees, which are, you know, is what you want to be on in the House. Two's on the appropriations, one on the ways and means. They're all chairs of committees. So the speaker's going to get to reshuffle and have some pretty key committee assignments. And Brad, it's at least interesting, as long as we're on this subject, if the Democrats are going to make any headway in the 2019 elections, you know, in the legislature, where they, you know, in the minority in both houses, you know, this might be a time to start. Toby Barker from Hattiesburg, he's a Republican. All three of these members are Republican, but Barker's seat would probably be considered the seat where a Democrat would be most competitive. It's got a pretty high African-American population, and then it's also a college town, which generally tends to be a little bit more Democratic. So it'd be interesting if the Democrats field a credible candidate in that race. Could be a sort of a harbinger for what's going to happen in 2019.
Yeah, we're going to have some special elections coming up this summer.
Yeah. Well, I think the governor's already set the Formby election for his Formby seat. I think it's 25th of July. He has yet to set the election. He's got, I think, 30 days to set the election for the Munsur, assuming he does resign, and the Barker seat. You know, Barker was he's a Republican, but he's considered probably one of the more moderate, most moderate, if not the most moderate Republican in the House. He actually ran for mayor of Hattiesburg as an independent, not as a Republican.
Bobby, on Barker, a lot of people may remember him. He was the one who did the preschool, who wrote the preschool legislation, right? The Early Learning Collaborative. Am I right about that?
He did. Chris, I'm not sure if it was a House bill or a Senate bill that ended up passing, but he was very
proponent of it.
He was very involved in it for sure, and also he's been the go-to guy in the House on school consolidation, school district.
That's
workers,
right.
You know, so he's so he's been cursed at some points on that issue of mergers, but he's been headed up those efforts in the House.
Formby is the chairman of the General Bills Committee. Barker is the chairman of the Performance-Based Budgeting Committee. Now, these are fairly new committees, aren't they, Bobby?
Yeah, but you know, they in the especially Formby's committee, the speaker's been sending, you know, he's been sending a good bit of legislation that way. So that's turned into a pretty influential committee. And then Mansour is chair of the, I think, Ports Harbors and Airports. Ever how that goes, deals with transportation, but not the transportation committee, the ports committee.
Right.
So they're all members of all committee chairs and all members of the money committees.
Bobby, I'm curious, and you may not know this, but it seems interesting in Mansour's case to go from a legislative position to a city council position. At least from the outside, people would wonder, you know, is that a step down or whatnot? I mean, do you know why he wanted to do that? Is it more just wanting to serve his hometown? Do you know much on that?
Well, I don't know a lot, but I do know Vicksburg has a very unusual city government, Chris, in the sense they have a mayor and two aldermen, or council members, whatever it's called, and there's the council members are aldermen. Let's just say they're council members for the sake of argument. I'm not sure, but they have they all three have equal votes in city government. So the mayor is considered the executive, but as I think I said in the story, you know, it's not quite as clear cut in Vicksburg that would not be a separation of powers thing, because it seems that in under that charter, the council members have a little executive powers. Like for instance, George Flagg, a longtime House member, was from Vicksburg, was elected mayor of Vicksburg. You know, one of his first duties was appointing a police chief. The police chief he appointed was just rejected by the two city council members, and he didn't have an alternative other than to try to get with them and get somebody they could agree to. I mean,
yeah.
The council members have almost, it appears to me from the outside, and I've never covered Vicksburg, but it appears from the outside that the council members have just about as much power as the mayor does.
Okay.
So it's a little different type of situation. So I assume the pay would be different too than say in Tupelo where the alderman would definitely be considered a part-time employees and probably if you were a person trying to survive on that salary, you'd probably have a hard time doing it.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's a way for him to maybe more directly impact his hometown there.
Yeah, in a
big way.
Yeah.
Certainly. Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on these appointments coming up. Bobby, any idea who's going to be kind of angling for these appointments? Several people, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's it gets into real inside baseball because a certain number of the most senior people in each congressional district in the House get an automatic slot to the to one of the two money committees. Like if you live in Hattiesburg, in Northeast Mississippi in District 1, Congressional District 1, the most senior member in House District 1 would have an automatic spot on two of the three or four most senior members would have automatic spots on the money committees. Steve Holland, who is definitely out of power as a Democrat. He has a slot on appropriations just because he's been in the House so long. And so I think, for instance, Toby Barker has a slot because it's seniority. But the next person in his district who would have an opportunity to move up to the money committee is already on the money committee. So the speaker could kind of juggle these things around and get an at-large member from somewhere else in the state. It gets into real inside baseball. But the speaker can it's probably the most powerful one of the most powerful tools the speaker has as far as having members feel that they owe him loyalty and stuff just because of the appointments to these the Ways and Means Committee and the Appropriations Committee and the chairmanships.
Before I let you go, real quick, I want to touch on the financial picture for the state of Mississippi as we close out this fiscal year. The new fiscal year starts July 1st. You had a story the other day, Bobby. I mean, we've talked about tax collections overall have been down. We had a couple of good months, and then they were really bad in May. But the story, as I recall, that you had is that maybe the overall financial picture isn't quite as bad as we first thought.
Yeah, Brad, it's the tax collections that most people generally think of that run state government taxes on retail item sales tax, the income tax we pay, and those types of taxes, they've been down for a long time, and they're, quite frankly, they're substantially down, and it's worrisome for the legislative leadership and for Governor Phil Bryant. But the saving grace for this year, at least, is the fact that in the 2016 session, the legislature changed the law and took all these fees and assessments that were going to pay for specific programs like the Victims Compensation Fund and the Attorney General's Office, took that money and instead sent it to the general fund where it'd be divvied out amongst all the agencies. And that's it's probably going to be about $120 million more for the general fund for this budget year, which, as you said, ends July 1st. So that's a saving grace. And then, of course, the Attorney General continues to win lawsuits and garner settlement funds for the state, and that's also been a saving grace. Now, the Attorney General and some other agencies would tell you, when they take those fees and assessments away from them, but they still got to pay for those programs, it's putting a big burden on their agency because they're going to have a hard time paying for those programs and running the other stuff they have to run in their office. So, that's sort of a double-edged sword, but at least from the legislative standpoint, they can say, here's extra money. And it was taken, sent to the various state agencies.
Well, good stuff as always, Bobby. And if y'all want more Bobby Harrison, you can check out our Capital V webcast. Comes to you each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Bobby provides commentary and analysis on all the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live on Monday afternoons about 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. The 2017 session is over, but Bobby will continue to provide us with perspective about all the news coming out of the state capitol. Bobby, appreciate your time as always.
All right, Brad. Y'all take care.
All right, now it's time for this week's In Focus photo essay. We're joined by Adam Robinson. Adam, how's it going today?
Very well. How about you?
Good, doing well. So this week, you focused on a, I guess, a lawnmower repair company, Turf Pro out of Saltillo?
That is correct. Owned by Ray Hopkins and his wife, Ann. And like we were speaking of earlier, trying to find somebody who was into repairing small engines and, you know, was turned down by a couple of local Tupelo businesses, and I'd found one guy out off of Palmetto Road, and it had seemed he had gone out of business, and someone else referred me to Ray, and he took me up on it, and I went up there one day and spent a couple hours with him and his crew, and they had a few things going on.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about before with the, you know, what makes these photo essays so neat is just the topics that you all pick, and you know, often it's kind of a look behind the curtain of so many different things. And, you know, this one in particular for summer, obviously a lawnmower repair shop is, you know, kind of right up that alley. Kind of how did you come upon this idea? Is this something you've been thinking about doing for a while?
Yeah, it had been. And it sort of just goes back to kind of a line I've kept with a lot of these photo essays is just trying to find something that you either wouldn't normally think about, or yeah, it's just a trade that's kind of dying off. So I'm not saying that what they do is a dying off trade, but you just don't think of, oh, I'm going to have my lawnmower repaired or fixed, because, you know, it's like I was saying with Ray, a lot of people just buy lawnmowers, and when they're done with it, they throw them out. They don't upkeep them. They don't do a lot of maintenance themselves to get a lot of longevity out of them, which for me, I'm completely reversed of that. Mm-hmm. So I'll go buy a $300 or $400, you know, push mower, and I'll keep it for 10 or 15 years because I take care of it. But then, you know, there's usually always a call of something that you can't do yourself, and that's where these guys come into play.
So what did you learn from being kind of behind the scenes? I mean, anything that really surprised you, stood out to you?
Nothing in particular that really took me by surprise. It was sort of standard stuff. I've grown up around, you know, things like this or I've known families who had, you know, businesses along this line, and it was just something that I had it in my head. I just had to find somebody that would let me go and let it play out.
So what was it? Well, I guess kind of what was their operation like? They've got, I guess, several people devoted to maintenance, and
yeah, they've got
sales too, I guess.
Yeah, they've got sales, and you know, Ray sort of helps out everywhere, and you know, they really know their product. They carry Gravely and Walker mowers is their brands. They sell some Echo, like chainsaws and weed eaters, but they service what they sell. And also, if you didn't buy it from them, and if it's not something that they sell, they can still service it. They can get parts, and they have a lot of universal parts, as you can see in that photo of the blades.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the cooler photos. On again, you can see all these photos. They're in Monday's Daily Journal, or you can just look them up at djournal.com. You've got a photo of a wall with, I don't know, would you say that's about 50 different blades just hanging from the wall?
Right, and that's just a small portion of the wall. We'll say that wall was a good 50 feet long and 10, 15 feet tall, just full of lawnmower blades. But, you know, some folks call them a Kaiser blade. Others call them a lawnmower blade.
Right.
That's a sling blade reference.
What is their most common repair? Or what are a lot of people there for when you were there?
I figure they're there for, you know, like the weed eater. That was a walk-in guy. He just walked in off the street. He needed a new spinner thread put on the end of the weed eater. A little spool. Mm-hmm. Spool with the weed eater thread in it, the string, and he had that replaced. They happened to have the part that was a universal part that fit on the end, and got that guy in and out of there within, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. And you know, one guy walked in. That's the upper left-hand corner photo. He walked in, had a John Deere, and he was looking for a part, and they were going to order it and get the guy taken care of. You know, belt replacement, but they get a lot of blades, blade sharpenings, things along those lines, and people will not pay attention when they mow, so they'll run over something, maybe bend the blade. So there you go, why there's so many blades hanging on the wall.
You get the impression, is the repair a big part of their business? Is it more about the sales? Is it kind of a little bit of both?
Yeah, just a little bit of both, and they're really stressed on building that customer relationship to have people keep coming in. So like I said, you know, the longevity of some of the mowers that they have, because they're not like a box store like you know, Lowe's or Home Depot, but you go in and you drop $3,500 plus on a ride and lawnmower, it's something you're going to, they plan on servicing for that customer. And 15 years later, they're going to come in and they're going to buy a new one from them because they built a relationship with them.
Yeah, sure. Anything kind of your photos that to highlight? We talked about the wall with all the blades. Any other ones that you particularly?
Well, we got Jeff Johnson underneath the one he's replacing the blade on, and that's I guess that's my favorite one of the of actual work that's going on. It was pretty standard as far as photos went. You know, you just got to shoot it for what it is and not go in and say, you know, with an expectation you're going to get something really, really stellar, you know. But this is just standard day documented of what they have going on.
Sure. All right. Well, anything, you know what's up next?
I have no clue what I'm going. Well, I have some things up my sleeve, but it's a matter of, as this one was, if someone's going to let me show up and shoot. So.
Sure.
That's what it's all about, but I'm not giving away any secrets.
I hear you. And if anyone has an idea, they can always send it in to you at, should I just email it to you?
Yep. Email it to me, adam.robison@journalinc.com.
Great. Thanks, Adam.
All right.
Another fine show in the books there, Chris Kiefer.
As always. It's like riding a bicycle.
Yeah.
A couple weeks off and right back at it.
Yeah.
You
didn't miss a beat, dude. It's the power of the beard.
That's it.
That's it. If you want to see Chris Kiefer's beard, visit djournal.com/newsbreak.
Scary.
Hide the children.
Yes.
No. Yeah. So right. We've got a show coming again Friday.
We'll
do it again. We'll have Scott Morris going to offer his review of one of the big summer blockbuster movies currently out there.
Yes.
We'll have Jenna Parsons on, I'm assuming. Talk about food and stuff.
We haven't scheduled it yet, but
she'll show up.
She'll be here.
She always does.
Maybe she'll bring food.
Maybe I wouldn't count on it. And will Derek be back?
As far as I know, he will. I think this was a last-minute thing
that
he couldn't make it this morning. So
we'll get him on to talk about the local entertainment scene, what's going on this weekend and beyond in Northeast Mississippi. So thanks to everybody for tuning in. You can find us a variety of ways. Of course, we're in iTunes, Google Play, any of your podcast apps. Just click the subscribe button. You'll get notified when a new episode drops. You can also find out about new episodes on Twitter. Follow us there at The Journal Memo. Did I mention you can stream us online?
Yes, you can. Memo.djournal.com. And you can send us an email, memo@journalinc.com.
This is how bad my memory has gotten. I literally just did that whole promo and then forgot if I even mentioned the website. I'm getting old, Chris.
Getting old, Brad.
I am. Check us back.
See you Friday.
Yeah, we'll be back Friday.